Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 37 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Today you're going to hear round one from a show recorded October 15th, 2013 at the Nerdmelt Theater in Los Angeles featuring Emily Maya Mills, Andre Dubuchet, Gabby Dunn, Josh Androsky, Mike Bridenstine, and Mike O'Connell. They're all reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing. Enjoy. And please welcome your first competitor who has brought a prepared piece for round one, Mr. Mike O'Connell.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hello, 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 hello.
The genre which I will be sexualizing this evening is Christian pamphlets given to me on the bus. More specifically, I will be injecting coitus into the 1995 classic by Josh O'Harris entitled The Room. Now, The Room ranks highest amongst my Christian pamphlets given to me on the bus, as I have been blessed enough to receive it not once, but twice on that great, clean, and affordable public transportation system of Los Angeles County, the Metro Bus. Though it is unlikely that you know The Room, I think you will find that there is a character in it that knows you pretty well. And that is your Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And so it begins. Here it is, The Room. I'm sure we've all read it. The Room by Joshua Harris, as fuckified by Mike O'Connell. In that place between wakefulness and dreams, I found myself in the room. There were no distinguishing features save for the one wall covered with small index card files, like those that are found in libraries. But these files, which stretched from floor to ceiling and seemingly endless in either direction, had very different headings. As I drew near the wall of files, my sex became engorged, as I realized that whatever was in those files was making my cock harder than the Rubik's Cube in the years before someone figured out how to take it apart and rebuild it all solved. The first file to catch my attention was the one that read, "Women I have fucked." The cards were shockingly accurate, and at the bottom of each one was my signature in my handwriting. There was Jenny Klumper, the redhead, whose guts I had soundly poked on that crisp fall day those many moons ago. Carrie Madigan, Jennifer Francone, Diane Sawyer. Yes, that Diane Sawyer. She gives a very disorganized blowjob, but her pussy tastes like sweet tarts. So never pass up the chance to lick on her womanhood if it presents itself. Greta Wilhelm, Consuelo Oblongata. The cards went on and on and on, and then it hit me. Who has been watching me fuck all these ladies? And was it possible that they had recorded these coital sessions? Man, I sure would like to masturbate to a copy of that. I began to feel the nervousness of the exposed and wondered what else this sick fuck, this all-seeing entity, had seen during my deeply depraved bacchanalia of an orgy of an life. And then without being told, I knew exactly where I was. This lifeless room, spare my throbbing and pre-cum spouting juggernaut of a cock, was a crude catalog system for my life. Here were written all of the shame-based sexcapades compiled by what could only be the most diligent of psychopaths who possess an unlimited budget with which to spy on me. My concerns quickly flowered when I came to the next file that was labeled, "Guys I have fucked." Ah, shit. Sweat beaded up on my forehead. Funny, I thought, I had specifically paid all those men I had fucked quite a bit of money to never speak of our shared passions again. But here they are, documented in great detail right in front of my eyes. As I read over the write-up of me gobbling the beautiful cock of a guy named Carl, in the bathroom at Staples Center during a Globetrotters game, I came to the realization that I would need to come soon. But before I could do anything about this realization, I came. It was then that I said a silent prayer for the janitor who has to clean up this bizarre library devoted solely to my exploits. I mean, seriously, guys, it was a barge full of cum. And it seemed to have no end as it forcefully spewed with great violence all over the files and my chest and the floor. Fuck, I thought. If this menace has been recording me fuck everything that moved, then why wouldn't they be able to see me now, furiously masturbating to my own sexploits, taking my own sloppy seconds, if you will? And wouldn't it fill them with rage? At what point will I be called out to task for my inability to stop fucking? I frantically searched the files for more clues as to the meaning of this room. I was only to find more and more depraved files regarding dark and twisted sexual indecencies, some of which I had long forgotten. Some of them were glory holes I have visited. Glory holes I have visited twice. Those I fucked who were unfit to fuck. Hobos and gypsies who I fucked in ways that even Satan would frown upon. Those who fucked me. Assholes I have licked. Donkeys I have used in a less than Christian manner. Those I have fucked on the bus. Those I have fucked on the bus after receiving a Christian pamphlet. Non-sex. For those who I really lowered my standards to fuck, for those who seriously lowered their standards to fuck me. Orgies I ruined, orgies I saved, orgies in which I could have shown more get up and go. That time I accidentally came on a cat. The times I have masturbated in a doctor's office without being asked. Inappropriate places I have come, not including unsanctioned doctor's office whack-offs. My interactions with pocket pussies, and the files knew no end, and I knew not whether to sexually relieve myself again or fall to my knees in shame and beg for the forgiveness of he, she, and or it that had brought me to this place of great and punishing reflection. And then, like my dick had done just moments before, the tears came. Sobs so deep they hurt worse than all of the syphilises that had been had by all of the dicks and all of the pussies throughout time. My shame was obese and had finally taken its toll. The rows of file shelves swirled in my tear-filled eyes. No one must know of this room, I said. I must lock it up and hide the key. But then as I pushed away the tears, I saw him. No, please, not him. Not here. Oh, anyone but Jesus. I watched helplessly as he read each card one by one. I prayed to his father that Jesus would not notice that I had recently ejaculated all over his well-kept files. In the moments I could bear to look at his face, I saw a sorrow deeper than even deeper than my own. He took out a file and one by one began to sign his name over mine on each card. No, I screamed as I pulled the cards away from him. His name should not be on these cards. It should be my name, for these are my sins. But there it was, so red, so rich, so alive. The name of Jesus covered mine. It was written in his blood. He smiled a sad smile as he finished signing the cards and put his hand on my shoulder and said, "It is finished." I stood up and he led me out of the room. There was no lock on the door. He told me that I still had cards to write. When I came to from my fitful slumber with my morning erection strong, I stared up to the heavens and thanked not only God, but his trusty son, Jesus. My sexual sins having been forgiven in my strayed fever dream, I knew exactly what I had to do. I was ready to fuck and suck and lick on my fellow humans again in a guilt-free manner. But this time, I would do it in Jesus' name. Thank you very much.
Mike O'Connell. Keep it going for Emily Maya Mills. You ready?
Midnight in Jasmine, a screenplay by Woody Allen. Fade in, interior, butthole, night. The tip of a penis reaches for deeper meaning as if to say, what would Socrates say? Woody, voiceover. They say that a man's brain is in his penis. If that's true, then I've got a giant rock hard brain. Or at least I did, until now. The penis's expression changes, the look in his eyes one of wistful melancholy. Cut to a naked-chested Woody sweating and thrusting as he addresses camera. Woody, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude, but the truth is, you know, I don't want to be in any butthole that would have my member as a member. Cut! Screamed a mid-80s Mia Farrow, whose recently vacated anus was already beginning to suffer from abandonment issues. What did you just say? Woody. You know you can't yell cut. Stop speaking in screenplay format, you nebbishy puddle of matzo ball soup. Hey, now is that nice, quipped Woody? Better question, is that even an insult? Sort of a weak analogy, and you know, am I supposed to be offended? Everybody loves my matzo balls in their mouth. They're delicious. It's unanimous. Would a taste to remember it by be a better... What did you just say about my butthole? Screamed Mia, now foaming at the mouth. As Woody launched into a full minute of deliberate stuttering for emotional effect, Mia reached for a nearby Olympia SM3 typewriter, narrowed her eyes, and lifted it over her head. She let out a key. Red leather, yellow leather. Because what was going to come next was surely going to be an Oscar-losing performance. Nobody quits paying dues in my butthole and lives to see the light of day, she screamed. Suddenly, with a crack of lightning, a 21-year-old Soon Yi Previn burst out of the closet and kicked her in the fucking face. Before Mia could get out the words, but I'm your mother, Soon Yi handed her two neatly packed suitcases and said, thanks for the plane ticket, bitch. The door's that way. Okay, Woody. Woody, believe it or not, I stole that from Shakespeare. Mia, quit talking into cameras. Is this a screenplay or an essay? As if from nowhere and everywhere at once, the voice of God boomed. I just found out I was doing round one this afternoon. Don't fucking worry about it. Woody shrugged into camera. I've spent my whole life contemplating the existence of God. Turns out God is just a mid-level comedian in need of a haircut. Okay. Anyway. But suddenly there was something in Woody's mouth. It was chewy and fragrant and pulsated with the excitement of a brand new wind-up toy, fresh out of the box. It was the small, tight, kimchi-flavored pussy of Soon Yi Previn, and boy, was it kimchi-y. In a good way. I like kimchi, said God. Between gobbles of beautiful young South Korean gongkin kyang, which is Korean for cat, Woody muttered, boy, the food at this place is just terrible and in such small portions. As he stroked himself. What? Said Soon Yi. Oh, you speak English. Woody tried to cover by acting, but his acting wasn't really his forte. Okay. I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention since meeting you as a child and watching you grow these last 10 years. But now that you have my attention, I'd overpay for that carpet any day, he chuckled and stroked his carrot-topped carrot a little harder. I don't get it. It's a joke. Weird, she flipped and nibbled on his carrot-headed cock with an enchanting, half-hearted interest only someone just out of their teens could convey. God, you are fascinating. I look at you and think, is there so much evil in the world? Were there Nazis? A sudden clack startled them, and they held each other as an eerie gust of wind hissed over their naked bodies. What was that? Asked Soon Yi. Oh, I think that was the door actually hitting Mia in the ass on the way out. Ha, the irony. Is that irony? Woody, I don't know. I think so. Anyway, I should know that. God, you little adorable cabbage flower. I have so much to teach you. So much to teach you. For the next 3 days, they ignored the phone, the constant ringing of the phone and the pounding of the media frenzy outside. And pound on, what? And pound away they did, as they embarked on an intergenerational tutorial on the subjects of jokes. Woody taught her how puns worked and then fucked her in her pun hole. He explained that many... Why are people upset? Ooh, sexual. It was like pretty clean. Okay, anyway. He explained that many people wrongly believed that oak was the hardest wood in the world, when in fact snake wood was much harder and African blackwood was even harder than that, also usually longer and thicker. But no wood would, but explained that no wood was harder than Woody Allen's dick. Finding it hard to remain in obscurity from the media, they took to a sailboat, Woody as the captain, Soon Yi his second mate. But mostly she just spanked him with a paddle while he said, "Ha ha, the student has become the master." For 15 years, they sailed around like a meandering second act. Occasionally stopping for provisions long enough to, stopping for provisions, lube, and sometimes long enough for Woody to crap out a movie. In 2013, they found themselves weary of fucking and came to port on the golden shores of Saudi Arabia. "Wow," said Woody. "The women here are certainly cover themselves up like their goods are made of black oil and the U.S. is here to steal it. But I guess if they're all shrouded and covered, I can't be responsible for checking ID." And he dove face first into a sea of pussy and exotic silks and some beards. His rock-hard cock locked into a particularly sandy oil well that wouldn't let go. "Help," he screamed. "Oh, God, help." "I'm sorry, I'm not real," I said. "Okay." "Touché," screamed Woody. Soon Yi tried to come to his rescue, but she was weak, tired, and quite frankly had just been keeping up appearances for the cameras for the last 5 years. This is real life drama. As his dick was rubbed away, to dust by a slit-eyed Saudi Arabian princess's slit, he screamed, "Please God, can you hear me?" Silence. The movie of his life flashed before his eyes. He heard a voice, soft, sweet, though it was not Soon Yi. "Welcome back to the club, motherfucker." The Saudi princess pulled back her shroud and revealed her face. It was Mia motherfucking Pharaoh. Fade to black. Thank you so much.
Emily Maya Mills. Thank you, Emily. Keep it going for Mike Bridenstine.
As he awoke on a warm fall day in Albuquerque, he smelled bacon and eggs cooking in the kitchen, and his morning boner was hard as fuck. Everybody knew breakfast was his favorite meal of the day. And for the past 5 years, he'd taken his time every morning. He had his ritual down to a science. With his weak left hand, he strokes himself to completion, blows a thick, fat pool of cum into his tighty-whities, immediately throws on some clothes and sits down eagerly to his mother's pancakes, her toast, or his favorite, a bowl of Raisin Bran Crunch. But today was different. He tucked his small erection up into the elastic waistband of his Hanes His Way briefs, something he learned from his friend Lewis in PE class, and makes his way slowly to the kitchen. On the counter waiting for him is a plate of scrambled eggs. And with thin, crispy bacon, his mother has formed the number 18 on top of the eggs. Today is Flynn White's 18th birthday. And he's finally a goddamn man. As Flynn awkwardly shoveled the breakfast into the side of his mouth, there was a knock at the door. To everyone's surprise, it's Elliot and Gretchen Schwartz. And Flynn recognized them immediately. He'd seen them on the Charlie Rhodes show a while back, and he'd probably beaten off to Gretchen 30 or 40 times by now. and one time just to Elliot. But he didn't like the way how it made him feel. He mostly loved to masturbate to his assistant principal, Miss Molina, because holy shit is she hot for no reason. But here Gretchen Schwartz was in the flesh, and as the door opened, Flint could see a hint of each of her nipples through her rich lady dress. I bet I could fuck her, thought Flint. I refused to do his voice. I bet I could fuck her, thought Flynn. I've got a cool first name I invented myself, and her husband's ears are insanity. But then it happened. Gretchen made her pleasantries with Flynn's mother and then walked up to Flynn and said that she had a birthday gift from him. I bet you do, bitch, thought Flynn. That's how he always imagined he'd talk to her if they'd ever gotten together for sex. Flynn played out his fantasies with marathon masturbatory sessions at his computer, but Flynn specifically loved MILF handjob porn videos on the internet, and his thoughts raced every time he saw an attractive older woman was around. He spent half his jack sessions finding MILFs on free porn sites that looked familiar to Gretchen or Carmen, his principal. Or he just watched the actual Charlie Rose clip on YouTube over and over, hoping his mom didn't hear him while he beat it ferociously while his crutches smashed against things in his bedroom. Whenever Flynn saw Gretchen, he got super horny. But all this time, he'd just been a boy, and today he was a man. And he already had his tiny peener tucked him up into his hands. Gretchen handed Flynn an envelope. "What's in here, pictures of your hot pussy?" thought Flynn. And it was almost as good as pictures of Gretchen Schwartz's hot pussy. It was a check for $9.72 million from Gray Matter Technologies. Flynn didn't know what to say, so Gretchen said, "We wanted to catch you before school." And then she leaned in to whisper to him, and Flynn's eyes almost bugged out as he caught a glimpse down her shirt at her pointy MILF tits. "I love rich guys," she whispered. "They make me want to have horny sex. I used to suck your dead dad's dick when he was around your age. And maybe I can suck yours too now that you're rich." Flynn nodded and then moved his hand down to show her his dick was tucked up into his hands. "Look what I did," Flynn boasted. "I really like that," Gretchen replied. And then she rushed out the door with Elliot. Unbeknownst to Flynn or his mother, they were both promptly shot in the head by snipers on their way to the car. As Flynn's mother put out her cigarette, she said that she had to be off to her job as a taxi dispatcher, or whatever she did now. And she told him that not to be late for school. Fuck that shit, thought Flynn. He had $9.72 million, and it was his 18th birthday. He could be late to wherever the fuck he wanted to be. Plus, he felt most at home when seated at a breakfast table. But just as his mother was driving away, he heard a noise at the window, and he could see that someone was sneaking in. It was a brunette woman clothed head to toe in purple. "Anne Marie, what are you doing here?" asked Flynn. "Holy shit, I didn't think anybody would be here right now," she replied. And Flynn saw Marie was holding thousands of dollars worth of stolen jewelry. "Please don't tell your mother I've been stealing again," begged Marie. "Ever since, spoiler alert, Hank and your dad died, I've been trying to cope, but sometimes it gets to be too much to bear." "You're a thief," exclaimed Flynn. "You're a liar too, just like the rest of them. How do I know you're not lying right now?" "Oh, man the fuck up," replied Marie. "Everybody in this family has secrets. Quit being such a little bitch about everything all the time." And then she walked over to Flynn, who was still at the kitchen table. "But I'm sorry, and maybe I can make it up to you." Then she reached her hand down to his tiny exposed boner that was still sticking out of the top of his hands. "Anne Marie, what are you doing?" And then Marie replied, "I'm going to jack your dick all the way off." Flynn's curiosity was piqued, but he still had questions. "But Uncle Hank is a hero." "I haven't had a man's touch since Hank passed," she explained. "Plus, I always thought he was hottest when he had that cane. After he went through his rock collecting phase." "But you and Mom are sisters," Flynn reasoned. "That's just wrong." She never told you, Marie retorted. We're not real sisters. We were both adopted. You were? Yeah, Marie said. Think about it. Skylar and I look absolutely nothing alike. And Flynn contemplated that for a second, glanced at his check from Gray Matter Technologies for $9.72 million and said, then get to stroking. And stroke she did. Marie took Flynn's boner out of his pants and began wailing on it with her tightly gripped fist. Flynn's dick was about to explode with cum seconds later until Marie said, I want this to last a little while longer. And Flynn leaned in and slowly said in his smoothest voice, then maybe your best course would be to tread lightly. Marie's purple vagina instantly became sopping wet. Flynn ripped off Marie's pants, began fingering her until her moans became louder and louder. Then Marie had an idea. She spread eagle on the kitchen table, exposing her perfectly shaved lily of the valley. Then she grabbed hold of one of Flynn's crutches and said, do it with this. Flynn didn't flinch. He grabbed his crutch in his hand and placed the base of it at Marie's pulsing clit to tease her. Then he paused and said, say my name. Do what? Marie asked. I'm the son of the cook, the son of the man who killed Gus Fring. Now, say my name. Marie was now more horny than she'd ever been in her life. The anticipation was killing her. You're the son of Heisenberg, she screamed. You're goddamn right, Flynn said. Then he slid on a black pork pie hat and sunglasses, and he began crutch-fucking the shit out of his Aunt Marie on the kitchen table. Marie came instantly, and then again and again. She'd never experienced pleasure like this before in her life, but she wanted to return the favor to her nephew. She wanted to feel his tiny penis inside of her, even though a crutch was just up there. She wanted to put his ricin into her stevia. But Flynn was jerking off the entire time and ready to blow. I have to come big time, warned Flynn. Aim at my tits, begged Marie. And Flynn experienced an orgasm like he'd never had in his life. Somewhere from deep inside of him came the most eruptive ejaculate he'd ever had. This felt so much different than ever before. And as he looked down to see he was covering Marie with his spray, he noticed the cum wasn't white. It was blue. Sky blue. But every bit is pure. And as he finished, Marie moaned, thank you, thank you, thank you. Flynn zipped up his pants, glanced down at Marie, and said, have an A1 day. Thank you.
Mike Bridenstine. Fucking A. Keep it going for your next comic, Gabby Dunn, ladies and gentlemen.
Renowned teenage fanfic writer. And so I usually will read something that I can't stress enough that I wrote in earnest between the ages of 13 and 15. So I went home actually this week and while I was there I picked up my notebooks from eighth grade. And I, again, can't stress enough how real this is. Oh, God, this is like therapy every time. Okay, so I'm going to read one of the many fan fictions in these books. I had so many friends. Okay. Chapter 1. A girl with straight brown hair stared out the airplane window. They were coming back from a school trip to New York and about to land in Capeside. Joey, a blonde boy, sat next to her. Are you all right? The girl nodded. Yes, Dawson, I'm fine. Just a little nervous. Flying sometimes scares me. Dawson smiled. It's okay. They got all kinds of security now. He put his arm around her. Don't worry. Thanks, Dawson. You always know what to say. She sounded sarcastic, but it was true. Oh, I hate it. Okay. Dawson Leary, get your cute butt over here. Dawson made a face and Joey laughed. It looks like Jen wants you. Sorry, he said. Duty calls. And with that, he was gone, leaving Joey to her thoughts once more. She sighed and continued staring out into the sky. She was tired of being in high school and hoped something exciting would happen. This is chapter two. Oh, there's so many pages. I'm not going to read all of it, but yeah. Okay. Give it back, Joey, Justin Timberlake pounced on his oversized friend. Why? Come on, share this with the rest of us. Justin lunged for him again, but it was a futile attempt. Joey pushed him to the floor with one hand, and Lance Bass turned around from his computer. Joey, leave the kid alone, okay? Joey shrugged. I don't see a reason to. Besides, since when do you care, Mr. Glued to my computer? Lance scoffed and turned back to the screen. Chris's head suddenly swung down from the bunk above. What did you take from Jupe? Which I assume is some nickname for Justin Timberlake. Joey grinned wickedly. His diary. Justin sat up. It's not a diary. It's a journal. Chris rolled his eyes. Well, Fatone, what does it say? Justin screeched, causing JC to roll off the bed below. What in the hell is going on up there? Chris flew down the ladder to the first floor of their tour bus. We're reading Justin's diary. It's a journal! In all caps. Chris returned with JC close behind. Sure it is. Justin reached again for the book, but Joey moved it away. Lance watched all of them from the reflection in his monitor. Joey opened the first page, and Justin looked like he was about to cry. Nothing interesting, nothing interesting. Oh, wait. Joey's face changed to remorse in an instant. Geez, Jay, I'm so sorry, I didn't know. Justin was tearing up, and he snatched the book from Joey's hands and ran down the stairs. Everyone was staring at Joey. Well, Chris cocked his head. Joey sighed. He caught Brittany with another man. JC gasped, and Lance frowned. Who was it? Joey paused. It was Lex Luthor. Again, so real. Can't stress how much I was in eighth grade. Okay. Joey stared at her coffee. Capeside was so boring of late. Oh, this is chapter three. The bell signaling entry to the coffee house jingled, and the brunette was soon joined by Jen, Dawson, and Pacey. Hi, Joey. Joey nodded hello. Did you hear? Jen was all abuzz. Joey sipped her coffee. Hear what? Dawson rolled his eyes. NSYNC's tour bus flipped en route to NYC, and they're all at Capeside General getting treated. Really? NSYNC? The pop group? Jen's eyes brightened. Yeah, I want to interview them so badly. She was working for the school newspaper, writing a sex column, but she wanted to write something else. Joey almost spit out her coffee. You, Jen Lindley, want to interview NSYNC? I must be crazy. Don't you like punk and other hardcore stuff? That's all I knew, other hardcore stuff. Jen shrugged. I figure it... Okay, wait. So I have to also stress that I'm Nostradamus. Because this was written in... I was in eighth grade. So 2001. Jen shrugged. I figure it will prove my theory that Lance Bass is gay. Guys! I'm a genius. Okay. Pacey shoved her lightly. Not that there's anything wrong with that. They all looked at him for a moment and he blushed. But, you know, how do you plan to prove that, Jen? Jen kicked Joey under the table. That's where I'll need your help. Chapter four. Justin slowly opened one eye and looked around. The room was white and there were flowers, lots of them, and balloons. OMG, he sat up. I'm in a hospital. He glanced over to his left and there was Lance with a black eye and a broken leg. He was unconscious. Justin gulped. Tentatively, Justin moved his gaze to his left. And it was JC, with cuts and bruises all over him and a broken leg to match Lance's. Justin was shaking now. Oh, God, G/D. I went to Jewish day school. Not a joke. Oh, God. What happened? Where's Chris and Joey? Are they? Suddenly, a nurse entered. I'm glad to see you're awake, Mr. Timberlake. Justin sighed. Please call me Justin. What happened? The nurse frowned. Your tour bus flipped. It was pretty bad. Justin swallowed. Where are Joey and Chris? He almost didn't want to know. The nurse smiled. They're okay. Chris is in physical therapy. He got off easy. Just some whiplash and a sprained ankle. And Joey, is that the one pinching the nurses across the hall? Justin laughed. Oh, that's Joey. He's okay. The nurse down the hall screeched. Yeah, he's fine. Just then, JC began to stir, and soon he was sitting up as well. He blinked. Where is everybody? As soon as it was all explained, Justin noticed how truly flowerful their room was. Look, it's from our fans. JC was grinning. Justin wondered why Superman hadn't saved them. Little did he know that that was a mystery for another time. It never gets explained. Lance woke up soon after and was told the same as JC and Justin. All three started to feel a little more calm when someone outside their room screamed, "What do you mean I can't get in? I have a press badge." Chapter 5. It hadn't taken long for Joey, Jen, Dawson, and Pacey to drive to Capeside General. Dawson and Pacey weren't particularly excited, but they had been convinced by the two girls to join them. Joey was bouncing in her seat all the way there, and Jen was trying to come up with a polite way to ask Lance Bass if he was gay. They'd gotten inside no problem, and the nurses, they asked the nurses which rooms the NSYNC members were in, but that was when the trouble started. "What do you mean I can't get in? I have a press badge." "I'm sorry," the security guard put a hand on her shoulder, and she abruptly brushed it off. "Come on, sir, please, one interview." The young officer sighed. "I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to leave." Joey spoke. Joey had brushed out her straightened dark hair and applied some glitter makeup and took out an outfit before she had gone. It was a short black dress with a spaghetti strap halter and a sequined rose spread across the top. She had got it at close time at the mall, even though her mom had said no. Jen had smiled when she'd seen her. "Wow, you look awesome. Thanks. You too." Jen was wearing tight light green capris with silver beads dangling off the bottom and the word bootylicious across the butt. "Let's go knock NSYNC socks off." Anyway, suddenly, because Joey looked so good, she stepped out from behind Jen and reached up and grabbed the back of the guy's neck. "Ma'am," but Joey silenced him with a finger. "If you let us in, I'll come see you later." The guard gulped, and the other three kids gasped as the thought-to-be-shy brunette kissed him square on the lips. The security officer promptly passed out. Pacey patted her on the back as Dawson announced, after feeling for her pulse, that the guy was definitely unconscious. "We didn't think we had it in you. You had it in you. Good job." Joey shrugged. Anything for Justin Timberlake. Chapter 6. Lance heard... It's almost done. Lance heard... Because it doesn't finish. I abandoned this gem. Lance heard the footsteps first. "Guys," JC shushed him. "Jay's sleeping." Lance nodded. "I hear people outside." No sooner had he said that when the door opened. "Shh, Joey, stop giggling. They're going to wake up," a blonde girl whispered from the entrance. "We're already up. Who are you?" JC called out. The trespassers jumped. They stepped, blushing into full view. The blonde spoke first. "I'm Jen Lindley from the Capeside High Chronicle." She flashed her credentials. "I was hoping for an interview." When she got no answer from either boy, she made her way to the hospital room and sat down near Lance Bass's bed. "So, why are you in the hospital?" She looked around. "And where are Joey and Chris?" JC interrupted. "I don't think press is allowed in here, Miss Lindley," Jen offered. "We had an accident on the tour bus," Lance said quietly, ignoring JC's stern looks. "Chris and Joey are in a different room." "Mm-hmm," Jen scribbled away on her yellow notepad. "Excuse me," Joey asked from the doorway. Justin began to stir. "Who's there?" JC leaned over to Justin. "Shh, go back to sleep. It's just some press people," Lance decided to encourage. Jen scoffed, and Justin sat up, noticing Joey, and he smiled. "Well, hello, I hope you're the new nurse, because I have an ache in my..." "Justin!" Lance blushed. "Ignore him. He's a little out of it from the meds." Joey giggled and sat on the end of Justin's bed. "I'm Joey." Justin smirked. "Nurse Joey?" "No," she glanced over to a grumpy JC. "I'm in high school." "I'm a huge fan of yours," she blushed. Justin said, "Our friend is also named Joey, but you're much prettier." JC grunted, and Justin glanced at him before motioning to Joey to come closer. He whispered loudly and pointed towards JC. "He's just jealous because he likes me." "I am not," came the response. Justin shrugged. "Oh, okay, of course," he said, and circled his finger by his temple. "I saw that, Timberlake." JC laid off, though, once he saw that Justin was looking at girl Joey. He remembered how sad he'd been on the bus about Brit and the famous evil billionaire Lex Luthor, and he just... and he deserved to be happy, even if it was with a small-town nobody. At that moment, Dawson and Pacey, who had been waiting outside, entered. "What's taking you guys so long?" Justin raised an eyebrow. "Are these your bodyguards?" Joey shook her head. "Did someone plan a freaking party and not ask me?" JC rolled over. Chapter 6. This is the last one. So, are you currently dating anyone? Lance chuckled and Jen blushed. Hey, I don't invent these questions, I swear. Where did they come from then? Lance sighed. No, not at the moment. Now, to be fair, are you? Jen looked up from her pad. And am I what? Dating anyone? No. She was surprised. Not really. Lance smiled. Okay, so any other questions? Well, actually, yeah, but this one is off the record. She looked down. Lance crossed his arms. What is it? Well, don't, like, be offended or anything. Oh, what? Jen shrugged. Well, it's this theory I have about, like, how do I put it? I don't know. Like, look at Pacey over there. Yeah, okay. Well, would you rather, like, kiss me or Pacey? Lance frowned. I'm not quite understanding the question. Okay, so would you rather, like... Wait, are you asking if I'm gay? Jen nodded. Completely off the record, I promise. Lance, well, I'm sort of ambiguous. Jen, that's not fair. Come on, that neither proves or disproves my theory. I thought gay guys were supposed to be nice. I had never met a gay person in my life. Religious Jewish school. Lance watched her talk. She was so cute. He had to try hard to keep from laughing as she passionately explained her theory. Lance interrupted. Okay, I get it. But is there... Oh. But what? Why do you have to ask this question? I guess I'm glad that my theory's kind of proven, but I'm a little disappointed. After all, finding out that your favorite NSYNCer wouldn't be interested ruins all your fantasies. Does it? Okay. Hence, why I don't tell anyone. He grinned wickedly. What kind of fantasies? Jen blushed. Okay, well, she leaned over and whispered in his ear. But like I said, you wouldn't be interested. I did that because I have no idea what she would have said. I'm 13. Lance sat up. Who said? You did. Lance brushed the hair out of his eyes. No, I said I was ambiguous. I did not say I was gay. So then, would you like me to show you around Cape Side when you get out? I mean, there's not much to see, but... Lance smiled. I would love that. Give me your number and we will hang out. Jen chuckled. Okay, I'm really glad my theory was wrong. With that, she kissed him on the cheek. Lance smiled. He was feeling much better already. The end.
Gabby Dunn.
There's two notebooks of this, guys.
When she brought up Nostradamus, did anybody else think she was going to predict 9/11 in there? Keep it going for Josh Androsky.
Hello. I call this... Whose fucking hard fucking big old fucking dick is it anyway? Drew Carey gently opened the packet of creamer and let its milky white contents generously flow into his sixth coffee of the day. He had barely slept a wink last night. Today was the big day after all. Didn't matter that it was just September, for Drew Carey, today was Christmas. Whose line is it anyway? Live on Broadway. Ever since he was a buzz-cut lad in the suburbs of Cleveland, he dreamed of the glitz and the glamour of New York City's Great White Way. And finally, that dream was about to come true. I'll sleep when I'm dead, Drew thought to himself. No fear. He left the green room of the prestigious Schubert Theater and headed to the wings. Showtime was in 5 minutes, and Drew Carey was in the middle of his usual pre-show routine, which mostly consisted of taping down his enormous pre-show boner. For those of you not in the biz, this is completely normal. Every male performer since ancient Greece has had to fasten their cork, and every lady wears a diaper to keep from geysering up the wardrobe. It's a tradition as old as drama itself. Drew, tearing off a piece of medical tape with his perfect teeth, stepped back and took in this moment. Wow, I can't believe I'm taping down my hog in the same place as the Phantom from the Phantom of the Opera. Oliver from Oliver. And the cats from Cats. Just then, his train of thought was interrupted by bebop jazz comedian Greg Proops. Hey, babe, Greg. Greg pointed to Drew's throbbing bloat. You missed a spot. As Drew went to look down, Greg flicked his nose. Oh, Greg, that trickster. What a great pal. They shared a laugh, and Greg began to playfully massage Drew's shoulders. Are you ready to overthrow King Darius of Persia? Because you're going to be Alexander the Great tonight, baby. The lights went dim, The crowd, over 1,500 strong, went ecstatic. A cacophony of family-friendly hooting and hollering shook the Grand Theater. It was time. Drew Carey jogged out into the stage to rapturous applause and took his seat behind his beloved desk. Welcome to Whose Line Is It Anyway? The show where everything's made up and the points don't matter. In fact, the points are as useless as, oh no, Drew a blank. He couldn't even enjoy that his name and the verb that was also his name were used correctly in a sentence right next to each other. He was locked in his own head. Come on, Drew, you wrote a whole dirty joke book. You can't think of one old-fashioned Carey zinger? As useless as a lady on Fire Island. Home run. The crowd went fucking nuts. But Drew felt off. He didn't mean to say that. And at that moment, Drew's taped-down T-bone started testing the strength of its bondage. You've never been so horny in his goddamn fat life. Drew shook it off. He was, after all, a professional. He introduced the improvisers, his A-team of Proops, Wayne Brady, Ryan Stiles, and Lil Colin Mockery. The first game, the always popular Props, went off without a hitch. Ryan made a great Bill Clinton cigar joke about one of the props, and the audience gave it to him, even though we're almost a year into the new guy's term. That's the type of crowd they were. They were on board. Going into game two, Drew looked at his trusty cue card. Of course, movie, TV, and theater styles. A crowd favorite. Drew polled the crowd for suggestions. Western, gladiator movie, porno, Mexican soap opera. This was gonna be great. Wayne, Ryan, and Greg got up to do the scene, a hilarious riff on a usually routine traffic stop. Buzz Western. Greg, as the sheriff, went into his pitch-perfect John Wayne. So good. Buzz gladiator movie. Wayne ripped off his invisible shackles, took Greg's spacework gun, and forced Greg to his knees. Drew, impeccable timing as always, knew exactly what to do. Buzz porno. It was perfect. All three of the talented improvisers shot Drew a look like, what the heck? And any other day, Drew would have shrugged right at the audience and moved on to the next movie, TV, or theater style. But something happened. Something was different. Animal lust took over Drew's brain. Buzz porno. The crowd howled with laughter, but the improvisers didn't budge. Buzz porno. Buzz porno. Buzz porno! Drew was breathing heavily and was blacked out with carnal thirst. God damn it, Wayne Brady! I want you to fuck Greg Proops, and I want you to fuck him right now! He didn't even notice, but his fastened flesh catapult had sprung loose from its tapey web and ripped a hole right through his immaculate gray suit. And maybe Drew didn't notice, but Wayne Brady sure did. And the sight of Drew's engorged javelin made Wayne go red with greedy passion. He shot Drew a look of pure desire. The crowd went silent. Does Wayne Brady have to grow an inch? Crash! Greg Proops ripped a hole right in the seat of his Ben Sherman mod trousers. You know, Greg started, everyone always thought I was gay, but they're wrong. I'm pansexual, doggy, and pleasure is pleasure. Fill me, Wayne Brady. Ignite me with your torch. From that moment, it was a blur of hands, skin, and holes. Fucks were sucked and jizz rained down on that stage like the grand Christmas blizzard finale of Miracle on 34th Street. We're talking one-on-one, DP, 3P, you name it. It was a blustering hellscape of man moans that would make John Waters blush. When they finally emerged from the fog of sensual destruction, it was almost 5 a.m. And the theater was empty. Almost. Still sitting in his chair, unmoved, tears in his eyes, was a little Colin Mockery. How could you? bellowed at Ryan Stiles. I was saving myself for you. After all these years, I thought you knew. And he ran off, tremendously weeping, and slumped into a pile of tears in the wings of the Schubert Theater. Ryan, maddeningly trying to put on his pants as he hopped off stage, rushed over to him. Hey, buddy. Ryan's soothing voice enveloped Colin's quaking frame. I don't know what came over me. You know I love you. Can I prove it to you? I want to show you something. I want to show you true beauty. Ryan took Colin's hands and they ran. They ran and they ran till they reached a massive skyscraper. Businessmen were already filing in. It was almost sunrise. Ryan and Colin giggled to themselves as they snuck into the elevator and made it all the way to the roof. From that glorious vista, they could see all of Manhattan. And as the sun rose over the concrete and glass jungle, they watched mankind's cultural zeitgeist, the entire island, come to life. And as the city woke, so too did truth. Colin and Ryan embraced and slowly, gently, bonded their bodies in the act of physical love. They boned for like fucking hours. Finally, Ryan rolled off Colin's warm, slippery body, and they held each other. They knew that their love, that this morning, would change the world. But they didn't know how right they were, because then, right then, the first plane hit.
Who's Nostradamus now, motherfuckers? Oh, that's amazing. Give it up for your final round one competitor, Andre Dubuchet.
All right, so this is the Puppy Bowl, which is a on Animal Planet during the halftime of the Super Bowl.
Truly the only way to follow 9/11.
Toby the Terrier Mix heard a human voice say, "Wah, wah, 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 Toby!" as he was lifted by the nape of his neck and placed in the middle of a small cartoony replica of a football field. He looked around excitedly, his glistening little lipstick schlong wagging like a sideways metronome. A dozen other puppies of various breeds clambered over and chased each other among scattered plush toys in a frolicsome maelstrom, and the AstroTurf smelled like plastic and shit. From deep within Toby's ancestral wolf soul, an overwhelming feeling reverberated, a feeling that set Toby's haunches jerking rhythmically like a mechanical stapler. Toby was too young to know what he was feeling was horniness. All he knew is that he saw a bunch of dog butts that he wanted to treat like human ankles and a bunch of stuffed animals that he wanted to treat like dog butts. In that primal split second, if Toby could have understood his own thoughts and those thoughts were translated into English, his mind would be echoing with five stentorian words. Let's get our hump on. Toby's nose shuddered with the excitement of vast inhalation as he processed the odors around him. Poodle with a vagina and butt, golden retriever with a dick and a butt, beagle with a dick and a butt, cocker spaniel with a vagina and butt, dick and butt, vagina and butt, dick and butt, dick and butt, vagina and butt, vagina and butt, vagina, vagina, dick, butt. As the radius of smell grew wider and weaker, he could only detect the butts. I can work with this, his tiny brain thought. In words Toby couldn't process, and he was off. First up, a feisty little Yorkshire Terrier who was panting quietly among the chaos. Hey, Yorkie, time to porky, thought Toby, again worried to have human thoughts, and those thoughts were translatable into English. Before she knew what hit her, he hit it. And he didn't quit it until the thing between his legs had jettisoned its mayonnaise packet of pleasure into her tiny sandwich of also pleasure. Blam! Toby dismounted as the little bitch shivered with confused ecstasy. $5 inch long, thought Toby in primitive canine terms. And again, were those thoughts possibly translated into English, it said Subway Jingle would be the best approximation of those thoughts for our purposes here tonight. Toby leapt forward and in a single bound was on top of a little Shih Tzu whom neither him nor herself knew was named Eowyn after the character from Lord of the Rings, who'd never been fucked by a terrier mix. During that split-second leap, his glistening chapstick had recharged completely and was ready to discharge another dollop of mutt-making juice into wherever it was thrusted. Unlike that stupid Yorkie, this Shih Tzu was an old pro. Do me doggy style, she yipped. Oh no, Toby growled. I'm going to do you puppy style. With a hunt here and there. Toby knew that Eowyn wouldn't shih tzu straight for a week. That's right. This time, he buried his bone in the dirt. That aforementioned mutt-making juice wouldn't be making any mutts, just mud. Mud the consistency of a Cadbury cream egg that had been chewed just twice and spit out. Toby hadn't yet developed object permanence. So when he suddenly noticed his now shit-covered popsicle, or poopsicle, he slurped it for a good long while in surprise and delight, until his pink swizzle stick was once again ready to compete in America's favorite reality show. So you think you're a puppy who's got a dick and you want to hump all sorts of shit? Yeah, do it! You fucking hump machine, do it! Starring Simon Cowell, Shaquille O'Neal, Sinead O'Connor, Donald Rumsfeld, and Sting. Tonight on Fox, which is also a type of canine, LOL. Side note, the author of this piece was now quite drunk as he was writing this. Toby looked up mid-dick lick and spotted another dick. This one dangled from a boy boxer's crotch and looked like a red Sharpie that had been rolled in lint. Toby didn't know what bisexuality was, but he knew he was going to snap into that Slim Jim! Toby paused to reflect on the fact that he'd just made a reference to a human commercial for a human snack food, even though he didn't understand human speak, much less his own thoughts. Fascinating. Toby shook his floppy head and composed himself. Fuck it, today I'm not a K9, I'm a K69, he thought. Without knowing what any of those words meant. And zoom! Toby was on that boxer's dick like white on rice, specifically like whatever white dude was currently boning Condoleezza Rice, whoever she was and whatever boning was. Toby was a dog. Toby and the boxer gnawed appreciatively on each other's fun-sized Twizzlers for what seemed like an eternity, but was actually 17 seconds, until both of them erased an invisible grammar mistake on the other's snout with doggy liquid paper. Spoot! They slinked away from each other with guilty expressions on their dopey puppy faces, both secretly thrilled. No sooner had Toby expelled millions of microscopic students from Wiener School for being too creamy... He expelled millions of microscopic students from Wiener School for being too creamy. So no sooner had he done that, did he spy a coy collie whom, unbeknownst to either of them, was named Rebecca Romaine Stamos. Whoever that was, and purely coincidentally, just like the human for which she was named, was a huge fan of getting double penetrated during group sex. Trust me, writes the super drunk author, an acting coach told me this information in confidence once, and clearly I'm not honoring the confidence at all. Seriously. Toby sidled up to the coy collie. Do you like to play fetch? Then fetch my balls, he yapped. Toby hadn't been neutered yet. She sniffed a nearby plush toy shaped like a raccoon and looked away. Toby reloaded his charm cannon and fired again. Have you had all of your vaccinations? Because it's time to vaccinate you against not having my cock in you. Toby reflected on how awesome this pickup line was, even though he didn't know English or what words or thoughts were. Again, the coy collie merely sniffed at a plush carrot-shaped toy with feigned indifference. Toby regarded the collie as he sniffed the toy and suddenly realized that this was the first time he'd bothered asking the boner recipient whether or not they'd wanted to receive the boner. So he fucked her. The vaccination against Toby's cock not being in her was effective immediately, as Toby's cock was definitely not in her. He wasn't sure if it was her vagina or her butthole, but he was swizzling with his stick, or what either of those two things were, or what his penis was. But deep down, he knew that his vaccination joke had been clever. Anyway, he fucked her so good that if he could think in English, which we've already established that he can't, his thoughts would have been, ha ha ha, yeah, I humped her so super great, she gonna give birth to a litter of dicks. Toby's pheromonal hump cloud had now wafted through the entire mini stadium, and the puppy bowl was now a fuck frenzy. Unbeknownst to the human viewers at home, thanks to the incredible skills of the show's unsung editors, or hump removers, as they were called by their appreciative executive producers. Meanwhile, amid the puppy orgy, a male parrot dressed as a referee, who had been watching all of the puppy porking, turned to camera, gestured one wing towards a female parrot, also dressed as a referee, and said, Polly, I want a crack. Hers. Then he bobbed his head with amusement at his own double entendre, even though he didn't understand the words he was speaking. Soon the puppies were all exhausted, and many had collapsed into napping on and among the stuffed toys. A peaceful post-hump haze hung in the air, and the green astroturf was sticky with puppy batter. In moments, America would collectively begin changing the channel back to the Super Bowl. But as a groggy Toby was gathered into the arms of a human animal handler, he knew that he had won the Puppy Bowl. Epilogue. The year was 2022. And President Gaga was leaning over Toby, the CIA espionage dog, with a broad smile on her face. This medal is for you, little guy, for saving Earth from resurrected Robo Bin Laden. Without your amazing humping prowess, we would all be dead. Toby panted with appreciation, but deep down he knew this was just the second most coolest day of his life.
Andre Dubuchet. Andre, stay right there, man. Let's get everybody from round one back up. Andre. Andre, buddy. Josh. All right. So you guys will be voting with your applause on a winner, but first I'm just going to remind you of what everybody read. So don't vote yet. I'm just reminding you. We had Mike O'Connell with Christian pamphlets that he got on the bus. No clapping yet. God damn it. Every time someone fucks that up. Usually somebody on the panel. All right, just reminders. We started with O'Connell with Christian pamphlets. Emily Maya Mills, who had to run off to another gig, with Woody Allen. Mike Bridenstine with Breaking Bad. Gabby Dunn, who is the other girl. She's here somewhere with NSYNC, Dawson's Creek, and for some reason, Superman. Josh Antrosky with Whose Line Is It Anyway? Andre Dubuchet with Puppy Bowl. So, now with your applause, starting with Mike O'Connell, Christian pamphlets. There she is. Emily Maya Mills, Woody Allen. Mike Bridenstine, Breaking Bad. Gabby Dunn, NSYNC, Dawson's Creek, Superman. Josh Androsky, Whose Line Is It Anyway? Andre Dubuchet, Puppy Bowl. Guys are making this tough. All right, we're gonna do Bridenstine, Androsky, and Dubuchet. So pick a favorite, starting with Mike Bridenstine, Breaking Bad. Josh Androsky, whose line is it anyway? Andre Dubuchet, Puppy Bowl. Mike Bridenstine, you're round one champion. Two very voracious fans. Big hand for everybody from round one. Thank you guys so much.
Well, that does it for round one, and congratulations, Mike Bridenstine. To hear round two from this show, featuring Rory Scovel, Ian Carmel, Beth Stelling, and Tony Sam, reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions, download episode 38 on November 23rd. Come see Competitive Erotic Fan Fiction live. November 17th will be at Shoryuken League in Eugene, Oregon. November 22nd at Nerd Melt in Los Angeles. December 15th at the American Comedy Company in San Diego, California. December 27th at Union Hall in Brooklyn. December 28th at the Davis Square Theater in Boston. And January 5th at the Tacoma Comedy Club in Tacoma, Washington. Details can always be found in the Competitive Erotic Fan Fiction Facebook group or by following me on Twitter at Brian Cooking. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.